Hello, this is Chris Yerkes reading to you from the March 18th edition of the County Chronicle. We'll begin with the first page stories. Villa Grove City Council lights out at Henson Park by David Porter. The Villa Grove City Council reached a consensus Monday night to focus its efforts on Richmond Park Ball Diamond lighting rather than repair or replace lights at Henson Park. It was noted that Henson Park Ball Diamonds can still be used for daytime games during tournaments. The city plans to do some work on Henson Park lights to make the poles safer for the community. Mark McSell, Public Works Director, said it would cost probably $6,500 to cut poles, but said estimates to fix the lights came back at $38,000 to $48,000. He said fixing them is not a matter of putting up new lights, as the brackets holding the lights are going bad. The cost to repair them did not include engineering costs, he said. Jackie Athey, City Administrator, noted that Richmond Park is eligible for using tax increment financing, TIF funds, while Henson Park is not. Also discussed at Monday's Committee of the Whole meeting was the emergency siren that no longer works. Alderman Chris Elston said the power supply only charges the batteries, which no longer take a charge and need to be replaced. He said the backup siren on the water tower shorted out some time ago. He said replacing the siren would cost about $50,000, but grants may be available. He noted that people are generally aware of tornado weather, but that the siren serves as a layer in your storm defense. He also addressed concerns about trains blocking crossings in town. He said the law that allowed the railroads to be fined for blocking intersections was overturned, so there's little recourse. He threw out the idea of placing sensors that would let the city know what crossings are blocked and for how long. The information would be available through an app and could help the fire department reduce response time. He said there are only a couple of sensor systems on the market. The one he looked at, which is the cheaper one, he said cost $2,500 per sensor plus $5,000 for a maintenance agreement. The data could be used to show the railroads how much of a problem it is. Mayor Derek Rasmussen said he was not in favor of the sensors because they would not correct the problem, only provide documentation. It's an asinine amount to spend when the crossing is still blocked. It doesn't fix the problem. Elston said he is not leaning one way or another, but wanted to start the dialogue. The council also discussed a texting system to allow residents to report complaints directly to the city rather than posting them on social media. Elston said it's worth looking into, but thought the $5,000 price tag on the TextMyGov system was a bit steep. Alderman Andrew Folk said it would not guarantee that people wouldn't still air grievances on social media. Also discussed was the issue of liquor licenses near churches. Rasmussen said there's been an interest in commercial buildings where the owner would want a liquor license, but the lots are within 100 feet of churches, which is not allowed under statute. He said exceptions can be made. He added that at least one of the interested parties was interested in putting in a pizza restaurant. It was generally agreed that alcohol with food sales would not be a problem, but there was no guarantee that the alcohol would not become the primary sales offering. Athey said the city has a soft liquor license that is not used much. She asked if that could be a solution by not allowing businesses near the churches to sell hard liquor. Soft liquor is typically beer and wine. The next article from the city, Arcola City Council, clean up to start on line mess in city. Letters will be going out to Arcola residents whose yards have been torn up by sewer work. Tilling and seeding will start this spring, Bill Wagoner, city administrator, said. He knows residents are upset with some of the messes, and the city wants to assure them that cleanup will begin when the weather allows. The contractor will likely have to return in the fall to repair areas where soil has settled or the grass hasn't grown, Wagoner said. The Arcola City Council approved a pay request of $1,007,000 for the work done on the sewer main replacement project. The council also approved hiring Tyler Drake as a public work laborer at the rate of $22 per hour. The council also passed a civility pledge as discussed during the long-range planning sessions. Work has started on the concession stand at Moore Park, Wagoner said, and the city made the first cut for a grant from Lumpkin Foundation for walking paths at the park. The next article is from the Arcola School Board, approved new communication tool. The Arcola Community Unit School District No. 306 Board of Education approved a new district-wide communication platform, renewed its technology support contract, and took action on several personnel matters at its regular meeting March 11th at the Arcola High School Library. The board approved an agreement with Aptigy for a school communication tool at an annual fee of $5,895 and a one-time setup fee of $3,500. The platform will consolidate all district communications currently spread across Remind, ClassDojo, Facebook, email, and other channels into a single system beginning next year. All district employees will be required to use it when communicating with students and families. Basic training is planned before the end of the current school year. Technology contract. The board approved 3-year renewal agreement with the Quality Network Solutions for Technology Support Services. The contract, which runs from July 1, 2026 through June 30, 2029, covers help desk support, IT infrastructure maintenance, cybersecurity planning, and other managed services. The annual costs begin at $40,000 in 1 year, rising to $42,000 in year two and $43,500 in year three. The district was also notified it has been assigned a permanent on-site technician. Literacy curriculum. The board received a presentation from elementary principal Mrs. Brewer and members of the literacy committee on a new elementary curriculum they are recommending for next school year. The board is expected to consider approval at its April meeting. Other business. The board approved adding the CTE Student Business Fund to the high school activity account. The new account will support student-run business ventures, including laser engraving and other products. The board also approved a resolution to renew the district's participation in the Southeast Purchasing Cooperative Intergovernmental Agency Agreement for the food service program at an annual membership fee of $100. The district has participated in the cooperative for several years, using its collective purchasing power to reduce food costs. Personnel. The board accepted the resignation of Christina Bell, preschool teacher, and Skylar Harford, sixth grade teacher, both effective at the end of the 2025-26 school year. Chelsea Beals was approved as head volleyball coach at the high school. The board approved amendments to administrator contracts, extending the contracts of Nick Lindsay and Kyle Shea through the 2027-2028 school year. The amendments also added a provision allowing administrators to request tuition reimbursement mirroring the language in the current teacher contract, along with a 4% salary increase for the 2026-27 school year. Support staff salaries for the 26-27 school year were also approved, including a 4% increase. School reports. The elementary school report highlighted several items from March, including teacher interviews for open positions, more than 30 student awards for responsibility in February, a canine trip to Aikman's Wildlife Center, made possible by a donation from the Arcola Foundation, and Read Across America activities, including dress-up days and mystery readers. In February, Mr. Helmick's homeroom achieved a 96% attendance, earning a visit to the school store. Every homeroom reaching 26% attendance in March will receive a visit from the snack cart. The high school report noted that Aiden Myers and Geraldo Alanis were named Rotary Seniors of the Month. The district's Illinois State Scholars for the year are Noah Nelson, Lainey Nelson, Aiden Myers, Micah Gomez, Carolina Torres. Senior Brevin Wisman signed a letter of intent to play baseball at Quincy University. The school also acquired a laser printer funded by the EIFES organization, which can be used to print banners, photos, and other materials and may support additional student-run business opportunities. The next article, the Newman City Council Blighted Properties Agreement approved. The Newman City Council opened their March 9th meeting with a representative from Ameren, Illinois, Andra Evey, outreach manager from Walker Miller Energy Services, who partners with Ameren, Illinois, shared energy efficiency programs, explained how residents can reduce their monthly utility bills through simple home improvements and available rebate programs with those present at the meeting. She told board members that heating typically accounts for the largest share of a household's energy bill. Heating is about 59% of your bill, she said. Then it goes to appliances, lighting, electronics, and water heating, with air conditioning being about 5%. Evie said improving insulation and sealing air leaks can significantly reduce energy loss. One simple way to check insulation effectiveness during winter is to observe a roof after snowfall. If your roof still has snow on it, it's usually a sign it's well insulated, she said. If the snow melts quickly, heat is escaping from the home. She also encouraged residents to check common sources of air leaks, including attic spaces, vent fans, dryer vents, and outdoor faucets. Evie provided several basic tips homeowners can implement immediately, including installing smart thermostats, replacing air filters regularly, adjusting Sealy fan directions based on the season, and cleaning refrigerator coils to improve efficiency. Ameren offers free or discounted smart thermostats through its online marketplace, along with rebates on appliances such as washers, dishwashers, and electric dryers. Additional incentives are available for items such as electric vehicle charges and heat pumps, she stated. Evie also outlined several Ameren assistance programs, including income-qualified energy efficiency upgrades. Through the Home Energy Income Qualified Program, eligible homeowners and renters can receive a free home energy assessment and may qualify for free or heavily discounted improvements such as insulation, ventilation upgrades, smart thermostats, LED light bulbs, faucet aerators, and shower heads. The most someone typically pays is about 10% of the project cost, she said. Ameren also offers programs for apartment buildings and businesses, as well as electrification incentives for residents who wish to switch from propane to electrical appliances. In addition, she reminded residents to be cautious of scams involving companies claiming to work for Ameren, noting that while solar companies are legitimate businesses, they do not partner directly with the utility. Residents interested in learning more about available programs can visit the Ameren Illinois Saving website or contact the company directly. Housing and property improvement discussion continued. Board members continued the discussion from last month regarding housing issues and blighted properties within the community. Alderman Rick Dorsett gave feedback from the drive-by evaluation conducted by Casey Home Building Solutions of the properties in question, and they were in agreement that they needed to come down except for possibly one or two of the properties. The proposed partnership with Land Bank Authority would cost the village $10,000 per year, but grant funding could help offset demolition costs for unsafe structures. It was discussed to reach out to Senator Chapin Rose regarding help with upcoming grant money that is going to become available soon. The board voted to move forward with pursuing the agreement, which must still be approved by the Land Bank organization. Firework donation approved, festival updates, cleanup day. The Newman Freedom Festival Committee requested the village's annual donation support of the local fireworks display for the 2026 event. Officials approved the $1,000 contribution for this year's event. Organizers said they're currently reviewing bids from two firework companies in hopes of securing a better value for the upcoming show. Festival organizers also received approval from the board to hold this year's annual festival on Saturday, June 20th, and move ahead with road closure around the park. In addition to traditional events, organizers hope to introduce a 5K color run the morning of the festival. Participants would run through town while volunteers along route toss colored powder at this year's event featuring red, white, and blue theme. Organizers also encourage local businesses to decorate their storefront windows with patriotic artwork leading up to the festival. It was also announced a tractor pull will take place on Friday, June 19th, and the committee is putting out feelers hoping to find an organization to possibly have a dinner that evening as well. Plans are moving forward for a citywide cleanup day on Saturday, May 16th, when dumpsters will be available from 7 to 11 a.m. The event will coincide with community garage sales planned sometime earlier in the month. Grant applications underway. Officials also reported strong interest in a federal housing-related grant program. So far, 24 residents have submitted applications and qualified, allowing the village to apply up to 8 grants, since each grant requires 3 eligible participants. Applications remain open ahead of the April 30th deadline. City logo. Alderman Jared Pollack presented several potential logo designs created by students in Mrs. Pollack's art class. Two designs were identified that might work well for the city logo and could be refined further. After reviewing the options, the board suggested combining elements from two of the designs to create a final logo that could represent the community. They asked that the artwork be adjusted and brought back for further consideration at a future meeting. Bank to sponsor new scoreboard and park improvements. Discussion continued from last month regarding replacing the scoreboard at the Village Ball Diamond. Trampas Keys told the board First Neighbor Bank has expressed interest in sponsoring the entire project at a cost of $3,700. Therefore, the city would not need to contribute any funds. With the sponsorship in place, the board voted to move forward with ordering the scoreboard. In addition to the scoreboard replacement, the village plans to purchase new infield mix for the Ball Diamond. Approximately 24 tons of infield mix will be ordered at a cost of about $4,900 delivered, slightly higher than last year's price, about $4,800. The material will be tilled into the field to improve drainage and playing conditions after weeds became a problem during the previous season. Motor fuel budget approved, street funding. The board approved the village motor tax fuel budget of $62,000 for the coming year. Trampas Keys said the primary focus will be maintaining existing streets rather than regrinding and building roadways. Planned work includes oil and chip treatments on several streets, with Broadway listed as a priority due to deteriorating areas. Keys also hopes to continue sidewalk improvements. The next project is expected to be a section of sidewalk in front of the Green Girls, with the possibility of extending sidewalk toward the Dollar General if funding allows. Bids will be open for the sidewalk work, as the contractor used previously is no longer in business. Water plant maintenance updates and water project funding update. Water Works Superintendent Matthew Rideout reported progress on maintenance work at the water plant. Painting has been completed on much of the equipment, including the filters, which receive multiple coats to help extend their lifespan. Rideout said the addition of a dehumidifier several years ago should also help protect the facility from moisture damage. Sand for the water plant's filter bed has been ordered and is expected to arrive later this month. Workers periodically remove 1 to 2 inches of sand from the filters, and about 8 inches will be added this year to maintain the proper operation. The board also approved the sale of approximately 16,000 gallons of water to contractors installing gas tanks in the community. The water will be used to stabilize the tanks during installation and will be sold at the village's bulk rate of $15 per 1,000 gallons. Superintendent Rideout provided an update on the planned water system improvement project currently moving through the approval process. Public notice for the project loan was published, and if no objections are received, the village expects to complete the remaining paperwork by the end of the month. If approved, funding for the project could be available by July, with construction potentially beginning later this year. The village has also applied for an additional grant through the Office of U.S. Representative Mary Miller to help reduce the amount that must be borrowed. If the grant is awarded along with the EPA loan, the village's share of the project could drop to roughly 20% of the total cost, or about $130,000. Rideout also reported that the village's recently purchased water department truck was involved in a collision several weeks ago. Repair estimates total about $3,100, while the other driver's insurance provided $3,700, which will cover the cost of the repairs. Property cleanup enforcement discussed. Police Chief Dixie Brazelton reported progress on efforts to address abandoned vehicles and other property violations. Notices were recently sent to several property owners requiring them to clean up junk vehicles and debris. Most residents have complied, but a few still have unresolved issues. Officials discussed options for removing items such as couches, mattresses, and vehicles when property owners fail to comply with cleanup orders. The board indicated it may wait till the community cleanup day in May before taking further action on some of the properties. Budget planning continues. Treasurer Mike Hutchinson discussed preparations for the upcoming fiscal year budget. The draft budget is expected to be distributed to the board members ahead of the next meeting so it can be reviewed and potentially approved before the new fiscal year begins in May. Festival account changes approved. Before adjourning, the board received a change to the account used for the community festival. Under the new arrangement, festival organizers will submit bills to the village and authorized village officials will sign checks from the account consistent with the process used by other municipal accounts. And the last first page article, Rare Raggedy Ann Collection Up for Sale by David Porter. Area residents will have a rare opportunity Saturday, March 28th to own a piece of Arcola and Raggedy Ann history. Tri-County Auction LLC will be selling the estate of Tom and Joni Wanamaker. Joni, who died May 11, 2025 at the age of 82, was the granddaughter of Joni Cruel, creator of the Toy Hall of Fame Raggedy Ann and Andy. Born in Connecticut and raised in Florida, Joni inherited her father's artistic talents and love for the doll, which he created in 1915. She and Tom, who died in 2016, decided to return to Raggedy Ann's roots and move to Arcola, where they opened a Raggedy Ann and Andy Museum in 1999. She helped revive the local interest in the globally famous doll in the town where her grandfather had been born in 1880. Joni could be seen at community events dressed as Raggedy Ann, and she freely shared her drawings and watercolors of the toy. She was an animated feature of the community for 2 decades. She had the kind of beauty that went beyond description. Kind, warm, playful, loving, unique, and genuine, said Roberta Brennan, Joni's friend who was assisting with the auction. She carried beauty the way sunlight fills a room, effortlessly, gently, and in a way that makes everything brighter. She added that Joni had a warm heart for her pets and her friends. Tom and Joni fit snugly in the community. Roberta recounted as she spoke eloquently about the grief Joni suffered following Tom's passing. At times, you feel like you're standing in the middle of a storm. Your thoughts are swirling, your heart aching, and the world moving so fast around you. It is love for someone with nowhere to go. The quiet moments can be overwhelming, and you feel like you could possibly drown in them. We must cling to our wonderful memories. Joni had amassed a large collection of Raggedy Ann items, many of which will be sold at the auction. The sale includes personal items as well, such as her collection of antiques, some of which were reportedly owned by her grandfather. While her family heirlooms do not include a written provenance, she told Roberta about the items connected to her grandfather. Among the items offered for sale to the highest bidder are an antique clock and an architect's cabinet with more than a dozen short drawers for storing art. There are about 50 collectible Steiff bears, some limited edition, Arcola brand Raggedy Ann dolls with low numbers, as well as Joni's collection of penguin figures. Also to be sold is the Raggedy Ann embroidered hat covered with artful pins that Joni could often be seen wearing around town. Many other antiques, including sterling silverware, crocs, children's books, railroad lanterns, and furniture are included in the sale. Arcola residents rallied to help Raggedy Ann into the National Toy Hall of Fame in 2002. Her brother, Raggedy Andy, was inducted 5 years later in 2007. The story of Raggedy Ann began when Johnny Gruelle's daughter, Marcella, found an old faceless doll in her grandmother's attic. He drew a face on it and patented the doll in 1915. Sadly, Marcella died that same year at the age of 13. Gruelle redoubled his effort to give life to the doll, averaging one storybook a year for the next 20 years. The doll soon made its way into American culture with movies, newspaper cartoons, and of course, millions of plush dolls. Gruelle inspired many other famous American artists, including Theodore Seuss Geisel, a.k.a. Dr. Seuss. Gruelle and his wife Myrtle had two sons, Worth and Dick. Worth, Joni's father, also continued his father's Raggedy Ann legacy. Joni's great-grandfather, Richard Gruelle, was also a noted painter. Another relative, also named John Gruelle, was the founding publisher of the Arcola Record in 1865, the oldest forerunner of the County Chronicle. The Wanamaker auction comes one day after Tri-County Auction's well-known spring toy auction. The auction house is located at 650 East County Road, 400 North Arcola. Look for the ad in the B section. We'll move now to the obituaries. Donald Bruce Gass, 78 of Arthur, passed away at 10:42 p.m. on Friday, March 6, 2026, at Willow Breeze Hospice House in Mattoon. Visitation will be held from 1 to 3 p.m. Sunday, March 29th at the Edwards Funeral Home, 221 East Main Street in Arcola. Military funeral honors will be held at Camp Butler National Cemetery in Springfield at 2 p.m. Monday, March 30th, and Bruce's remains will be placed in an above-the-ground columbarium niche at the Camp Butler National Cemetery. James Philip Jim Harrier, 70 of Arcola, formerly of Decatur, passed away at 8:52 a.m. on Sunday, March 1, 2026 at Horizon Health in Paris. A celebration of life service will be held at a later date. The Edwards Funeral Home is assisting with arrangements. Douglas Doug Charles McCrory, 66 of Tuscola, passed away suddenly and unexpectedly the afternoon of March 8, 2026. He was at his son's house and had enjoyed a walk around the property before starting work on a project which included visits from cousin Mike Morris and close friend Buddy Mark Geiler. Visitation was held Saturday, March 14th at Hillegas Schrader Funeral Home, Tuscola, followed by a celebration of life service. A private burial will take place at a later date. Shirley Schrader Conlin, 88 of Arthur, passed away on March 11, 2026. She was born in Yoga on July 13, 1837, the daughter of Edward and Dolores Schrader. A celebration of life was held at Schrader Funeral Home in Arthur on Sunday, March 15th, with a graveside service at the Arthur Cemetery Monday, March 16th. Jeffrey Allen Miller, 58 years, 4 months, and 7 days of Arcola, passed away at 4:05 p.m. Wednesday, March 11, 2026, at his residence. Funeral services were held Saturday, March 14th at Walnut Grove Packaging in rural Arcola. Bishop Lamar Miller officiated. Burial was in the Baghdad Cemetery in rural Arcola. Visitation was held Thursday, March 12th and Friday, March 13th at Walnut Grove Packaging. The Edwards Funeral Home assisted with arrangements. Paul A. Helmuth, 62 years, 7 months, and 9 days of Arthur, passed away at 3:55 a.m. Monday, March 9, 2026, at Northwestern Memorial Hospital in Chicago. Funeral services were held Thursday, March 12th at the HCK West Building, south of Arthur. Bishop Howard Otto officiated. Burial was in the Otto Cemetery, Arthur. Visitation was held Tuesday and Wednesday at the HCK Building. The next article is entitled Voting Open for the Coolest Thing Made in Illinois. Voting is now open in the Illinois Manufacturers Association, IMA, 2026 Makers Madness Contest, a bracket-style tournament that lets the public decide what product will be crowned the coolest thing made in Illinois. One of the nominees is from Libman in Arcola, while several hail from Champaign, Urbana, and Decatur. Presented by Comcast Business, the annual competition celebrates the incredible work of manufacturers across Illinois, which have long served as the backbone of our state's economy. Manufacturing is the largest contributor in any industry to the state's gross domestic product, supporting nearly a third of all jobs in Illinois and contributing more than $580 billion to the state's economy each year. More than 100 unique products from every corner of the state were nominated for this year's contest, with candidates ranging from farming, construction, aeronautics, energy storage equipment to iconic pantry staples, beverages, sweet treats, and a variety of vehicles. Voting throughout the contest will take place at www.makersmadnessil.com, where voters can choose which product will advance to the top 16. Voting for this round runs through 11:59 p.m. on March 22nd, and participants can vote up to 3 times per day per device. Consecutive rounds of voting in head-to-head matches will take place each week thereafter to further narrow the field, culminating with an award ceremony at the Governor's Mansion on April 15th, when the coolest thing made in Illinois will be named. Illinois manufacturers make amazing products that deserve to be celebrated for innovation, creativity, and excellence. Our manufacturers are solving some of the world's most pressing challenges while creating jobs and generating economic investment in communities throughout our state, said Mark Denzel, president and CEO of the Illinois Manufacturers Association. We wish all products nominated the best of luck as we showcase the best of our state's dynamic manufacturing sector. The next article, Truth is Out of Fashion, Common Sense is Passé, by the ramblin' man Dave Porter. I just thought I'd let everyone know that I'm no longer 5 feet 6 inches tall. I had a growth spurt in my 60s, and I'm now 6'2". That's a true story. You want to know why it's true? Because I said it, and I thought it. I believe it. So now it's true. That's all it takes these days. I don't know whether it's political influence, artificial intelligence, COVID-19, climate change, alien invasion, deep state manipulation, social media, or something in the water, but the entire concept of what is real and imaginary is upside down. I suppose society has always been afflicted with conflicting truths. I can tell you back in the day, I had some aunts who were particularly gifted with the art of exaggeration and fabrication. When you look at history, look at who wrote it and who they wrote it for. The history that tends to make its way into textbooks was written by the winners, the survivors, and the promoters. Cave drawings show great hunting success, don't have any pictures drawn by mastodons or woolly mammoths. Storytelling, right or wrong, has always been a staple of society, despite its inherent unreliability. We've all played that telephone game where the story changes a little each time it's passed down the line. The truth isn't always true. Used to be, it's what we collectively believed, and now it's what we individually believe. There was a time when fact and faith were separate entities. It was okay to have certain beliefs as long as they didn't get in the way of our collective facts. We had things like evidence, which pointed to facts, and lack of evidence, which indicated conjecture. We don't have it that anymore. Allegations and proof are now synonyms. We used to have things like eyeballs, which we could see something and discern truth from. We don't have anymore. We still have eyeballs, we just don't always believe them. Doubt, not even reasonable doubt, is all you need today. Blame is handy too. If I offer you a sandwich, but you don't care for my sandwich, it's now my fault that you're hungry. Accountability and responsibility, pshaw. Used to be the judicial system was the final arbiter of truth. We know they get it wrong sometimes, but at some point, somebody has to give the final say, right? Wrong-o, it doesn't work that way. Your truth and my truth may be miles apart, but your truth is still true for you, and my truth is still true for me. We used to say that we'll just have to agree to disagree. That's flipped now, too. We just disagree to agree. This is really good news for all of us. It shows how much we've grown as a society when we're not bound by inconvenient truths. We can take comfort in inconceivable deceit. Salt is good for you. Racism doesn't exist. Aliens are real, but climate change isn't. Vaccinations are a hoax. The economy is great. Assassination isn't murder, depending on who gets assassinated. This isn't national politics because I see it at the local level, not just local people believing national, international propaganda. You can see it in local issues, personal relationships, and among our friends and neighbors. It's good, though. Fantastic, really. I don't know about you, but I was getting a little fed up with common sense. So now I can be over 6 feet tall. My basketball skills are pro level. My cooking is to die for, and everybody loves me. This isn't much better than the old days when justice and equality were the bullies. Those aunts sitting around their dining table spreading their bologna sauce were pioneers ahead of their times. We have time for a few briefs. Arthur Area Good Friday and Easter Sunday services. The Arthur Ministerial Association invites everyone in the community to a Good Friday service April 3rd at 12 noon at the Arthur First Baptist Church. The service will be 1 hour long with different breaks for those who need to come and go for their lunch breaks. Different churches will be sharing at different times during this service. This is planned as a way for people to pause during the middle of our day and reflect on what Good Friday means. The community Easter sunrise service will be held at Sunday, April 5th at 7 a.m. at the Arthur Mennonite Church in Arthur to celebrate the resurrection of Jesus Christ. This service will include special musical numbers by people in the community, and the message will be brought by First Baptist Pastor John Stewart. Come in, be part of these two celebrations to worship the Lord and celebrate Good Friday and Easter with others in your community. That is all the time we have for this week. This is Chris Yerke saying goodbye and see you again next week.